Hello, this is Beyond the Bell with WASDA, Wisconsin's hub for professional development for anyone working in out-of-school time programs and youth-serving organizations. It's our mission to help you provide the highest quality care to children and their families. If you wish you had an extra tool going into programming to help guide behaviors in a productive way, wish you knew more about how to provide the whole family with support, or you want to enhance your own well-being, then this is the home for you. We know what it's like to feel like you never have enough time or resources to meet everyone's needs, and we're here to support you through the challenges. Stay tuned as we explore new ideas and strategies that you can use right away. I'm Rachel Sharon, health educator with Marshfield Clinic Health System's Center for Community Health Advancement and Wisconsin Out-of-School Time Alliance. We're excited you're listening today to our conversation with Terry Johns. Terry is CEO of United Way Southwood in Adams County. She's been serving in this role since 2008, and she enjoys creating lasting change in our communities and the community she serves. So in the out-of-school time arena, it's not uncommon for youth-serving leaders to enter the field because they simply like working with kids or they like a particular topic like STEM or outdoor recreation. It often takes a short time in programming to realize that the child and family needs are much more complex, and we quickly feel a larger and more urgent calling to serve the whole child and the whole family. Unlike during the school day, however, our programs rarely have the support of staff such as social workers who can help us make important connections for families, and it's up to us to forge partnerships and find solutions to these problems. So as CEO of United Way in Southwood and Adams counties, you help mobilize local community efforts around social determinants of health. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about your career trajectory and what your current work looks like in the day-to-day?
So my work really looks very rewarding, which is you know really, really awesome. But the idea that we can come to the table, convene members of the community, thought leaders, people with deep pockets as well, you know, investors, that we can convene folks around the table around certain topics, I think is one of the most rewarding parts of my career. And I think that that's really the trajectory for myself, but also for just United Way leadership in general, that we really have a unique opportunity in our positioning in the community because we have so many strong connections in a variety of areas. In this case, of course, you know, thinking about youth and what that means. So we're in a position where we are looking at the well-being of the whole community. Of course, the interest here is youth, but of the whole lifespan of a community. So from birth all the way till senior citizens, possibly even end of life. And United Way's in all communities around the state of Wisconsin, you know, have this opportunity. We focus as a network of United Ways in the strategy areas of education, financial stability, and health. But how that's defined in each community is unique to that community and to that United Way. That's where I think there's a lot of great benefit and partnership for organizations or specific targeted populations such as youth.
Yeah, so you're giving us a lot of insight into all the connections that United Way has, and that is your job by definition. I thought it was interesting right away you talked about part of our job is thoughts and like how to connect the dots. And part of it's almost related to money. And that's just the black and white terms. Like sometimes it takes those resources to meet needs. And I think that's probably a thought going through a lot of the programs that are listening now is that how do we make it happen? We need those resources to make it happen. So you throwing it out there.
Yeah. And I think probably one of the greatest successes with that is open communication, open dialogue, and getting people that have a similar interest or a common goal, getting them together in the same room or, you know, literally or figuratively, but getting convening members of the community or members who might have an influence on that community to work on a variety of different things, right? It could be funding a project. It could be thinking about resources. And, as was said earlier, the motivation or the intent of getting involved with youth programs might be really about spending time with that youth, but understanding really quickly that there's so much more and there's so much more wraparound service needed. So by bringing, you know, stakeholders in the community together around this, I think it's win-win, right? At a minimum, people are understanding what other people do. And when I say people, I mean organizations, right? Everyone is understanding each other. It helps really break down those silos and minimize, you know, each of us just working in our own four walls. We also have to understand and realize that sometimes that feels really, really big. And sometimes that's just, it's really hard. If you're thinking, well, I provide an after school program of whatever sort, you know, that's what I do. But really there's so much more, or could be, depending upon willingness and, you know, ability to do so, there could just be so much more to that by simply engaging others in the community around the work that you're trying to do.
Absolutely. I think a lot of time in out-of-school time programs, it can feel really isolating. Just like we mentioned, we don't have the same setup or the same staff necessarily. But you're saying it might feel like a big step, or it might feel vulnerable or even awkward maybe, but like the rewards outweigh the cost by any means.
Absolutely. And I think you see that with the families that you serve. I think it also can just feel impossible. you know, I mean, so yes, it's a big step or what, but it also just might be, hey, I don't physically have the staff or have the time or am able to commit to another meeting, another, you know, time to connect. But I think that it is really worthwhile. And I would really encourage anybody who might be listening to engage their local United Way. You know, you could reach out. And like I said, we all have some level of focus on what we call education, just in my service area. And I can only speak to mine, but each community defines their own. We focus on early years, so development up until start of school, and what that looks like and what access that families have to learning opportunities. And then our other focus is what's happening outside of the school day. Role models, mentors, enrichments, environments, you know, what do kids have access to? So that's what we're focusing on in our community. But like I said, every United Way focuses somewhere on what we call education. So connecting maybe with your local United Way and, you know, saying, hey, here's the challenge that I'm facing. You know, maybe it's as simple as this is what we're hearing from families. We can deliver really good quality programming for 90 minutes or 120 minutes, you know, a day, but we're really concerned about what happens after that. You know, we're concerned about, maybe we're concerned about hunger. Maybe we're, you know, it's not necessarily directly related to the STEM program that you're offering, but what can be done? How can I bring those things, if I'm offering this type of programming, how can I bring those things to the families that I'm serving? And I think that that's what we're really seeing a lot in our community and the communities that we serve is let's go as community programs to where families are. You know, let's go to where they are and engage them. And that could be in a variety of ways. That could be as simple as enlisting your local 211 contact center. So 211 is a 24-hour resource and referral line that is available in the state of Wisconsin. We're very fortunate because we are completely covered statewide every single second of every day. And so 211 will connect you with needed resources and programs. You may call 211 as an individual and say, you know, it could be something very simple, like I have professional clothing I want to donate, or it could be something very, very intense, like I am trying to care for my aging parent and I don't know what to do, you know, what programs are available to me. So, you know, there's a wide spectrum there, but there are literally thousands of programs in the 211 database that can help the same families that are being served through these programs. And so sometimes it's that identifying a need and then, you know, what can I do to help meet this need? I think sometimes it's easy to say, I'm providing this program for 90 minutes and that's what I'm that's what I'm going to do. But we see that, right? And when we really truly care about our community, we see that there are needs that are greater than just the service that we're providing. And so I think that that's one way, and that would be a really simple, easy way, right, is sharing 211 contact information, just even talking about the 211 program with families. But there's also the opportunity to convene, like I said, any type of stakeholder from the community around a topic. You know, maybe it's some sort of curriculum or learning. You know, maybe kids are talking about, hey, we really want to learn about this, but you just don't, again, have the capacity to seek it out, to learn about it, or maybe it is challenges. Transportation, we know that's a big challenge for members of communities across the state. I think United Way is in a unique position because we're in every community. We are, for the most part, apolitical, unless sometimes lobbying for a cause that is appropriate to that community. We're well-respected. It's a brand that people recognize. And so I just would encourage people to, you know, reach out and say, how could you help us, or how could we strategize? So maybe it's something that needs to be fixed, or maybe it's something looking forward to say, we'd really like to do this, but we don't know how.
You've given us so much. Let's pull some of this apart. I love it, Terry. So, I mean, one of the things you're talking about is that first step, crossing that line, asking for that help. And you gave such a very good, concrete example. I think you said, this is what we're hearing from families, or this is what the kids are telling us. And you don't necessarily have to have some like fancy assessment or a bunch of numbers, but like you can start the conversation with that. Like a simple conversation can be started to break down those silos and asking for help. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's really important. And sometimes that does happen, right? The study happens first, and then we have all these numbers because, you know, we want to come into something just loaded, right? Like we've got all the facts, all the details, everything to support our idea. But perhaps that's already been done, or perhaps it's not even needed. If the thought is, we serve 100 kids in our program, 40% of them have this challenge, or, you know, 60% of them have said their interest is this. I think for me, for my community, that's enough to back up, right? That's the proof. Mm-hmm. We don't have to necessarily have a lot of data to back it up. Of course, we want to, you know, data is important to measure success and opportunity, of course. But I think for initial conversations, comfort's important. Yeah. And people should just feel comfortable, and you could connect. Someone could reach out to me and try to connect, and we could have a great conversation, and we could say, you know, I'm just not really sure how I see that aligns. Or I'm not sure that I can help you, but maybe this person can. Or so, worst case scenario, you just had a really good, meaningful conversation and taught someone else about something about your program and about what you're trying to do. Best case scenario, right? The challenge gets solved, or the new opportunity, you know, gets in front of the group. But I think there's nothing to lose, really.
Yeah. And part of what you're talking about is like ending that like isolation feeling. Like you're not alone. You can reach out, have a simple conversation. And there's also these concrete resources we can get people hooked up with. So whether that's educating one another about what's already there, or even the 2-1-1 resource, which is invaluable.
We found this with a lot of the coalitions that we formed in our community, not necessarily all around youth, but around different areas. But what we have found is sometimes literally just getting people in the same room around the table and just sharing. I mean, it sounds so basic, but we will have a 90-minute meeting and we'll spend 60 minutes of it giving each person, you know, the time to say, tell us what's going on with your program. And when, as an example, when we started our hunger coalition in our community, it took us like probably 12 meetings to get, so monthly, about a year, to get everyone in the room to know what everyone else did and what they offered. And they were all food providers. You know, so there's it's so complex. And the other thing that it can do is maybe at some point reduce duplication. And that translates into better use of resources, right? So if you and I each have a program and we're doing the exact, you know, half of what each of us does is the exact same, could one of us do that and the other one take on something new or another new opportunity? And I know that that doesn't always work well when we're talking about individual or different organizations. But I think there's the recognition of, or maybe you're feeling something within your own program is really struggling. It's really freeing when the person across the table from you that maybe you've only ever met one time, when they're like, oh, we struggle with the same thing. And you're like, okay, you know, I'm validated in this is a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe we can work together and fix that each at our own organization. But I think there's just such value in getting people talking to each other. And that's probably half the silo, right?
Yeah. Part of what you're talking about is kind of just that humbling, like we're in it too, and making that connection, we're not alone. So you've shared a lot of great information and have convinced probably a lot of people out there to call their United Way or some community partners. But just in case we haven't pulled everybody in, what are some other benefits to breaking down those silos in communities?
I think one of the biggest things to recognize is that your efforts don't have to be ginormous, right? You can just make a connection, maybe start as simple as, could we meet for coffee? Or meet for a time when we don't have kids and maybe the meetings are taking place during school, right? Not in the out of school time. And just start to build relationships, and that could be meaningful. So it could be a like program. It could be an investor, potential investor, a stakeholder in the community. Could be leadership of your community. You know, when you think about local elected officials, even thinking about, you know, maybe the mayor has little kids, or, you know, it could really be something like that of how are those connections most meaningful. And it's usually when you can identify individuals or organizations that have those same feelings in their heart that you have. I think that the most successful community collaborations and tearing down of silos is when we are, you know, really acting with our heart and what really means most to us as individuals. And so I think that that makes it easier when it's a personal connection, even though it's our work. But you know, for those who are really truly passionate about what they're doing, those go hand in hand. So building relationships, and again, that can be on a small scale. I think often people think, I would say, you know, if I jump back 20 years ago, if I was thinking about this work, I would think it had to be something really big. You had to create this coalition or task force or relationship that is going to do this great, big, huge thing. And that's awesome if you can do that. But I think that feels overwhelming. And if you truly believe in what you want to do moving forward, or you are very burdened by the challenges, that's where you need to seek out others in your community, other stakeholders that might have the opportunity to help and really set a common goal. And, you know, probably being open-minded is pretty important. You might go into the relationship building phase of, you know, with an end in mind, but that's not what ends up happening at all. You know, perhaps it's a group gets convened and a like goal is identified, but it's not necessarily maybe what you came for, or maybe it's exactly what your challenge was. This is hard. This is hard work. Not everyone's motivated the same way. Not everyone has the same measurement of success. And so I think there just has to be an openness to being real and being authentic. And, you know, that's when we are our best selves. And that's when we really can create change, but we have to be vulnerable in the process. And so that can be scary and that can be hard, but it can also just be the very most rewarding. It's hard to look at what our challenges are, or even, you know, even just, you might be listening and say, you know what, this all sounds great, but I literally do not have one more hour. Like I don't have it. And that is a challenge, but we find it. You know, we adjust and we make some concessions maybe where we have to, or some adjustments to be able to identify or to target the need that we've identified. Or maybe there's someone else that we are acquainted with. Maybe there's a colleague or an employee or a partner within the organization that can take on that, you know, championing that cause. But if it's really, truly just sitting down and trying to, you know, the goal is to get people together and learn from each other, I think that's really a role where your local United Way could be part of that convening.
Yeah, you've given us a lot of stuff here. So going back, just even the idea of using the connections you have, that's a simple place to start. You might already know someone in the community or a parent from your program who might have some leadership in the community, or even thinking about it from the perspective of like, who's on your wish list that you want to get on your side? Like if it's that mayor or maybe someone from the mayor's office, that could be kind of your way to get this information on somebody else's table and not take it on yourself.
Don't forget about your counterparts. Now, I mean, United Way is a strong network. So I have, you know, I have colleagues all over the state, all over the country, all over the world that maybe I can call on. And so if you're a standalone organization, you might not have that. However, if you looked at a like-sized community, maybe is a good place to start. Maybe there's one across the state, but you start identifying, looking at what programs are in those communities and say, oh, that seems kind of similar to what I'm doing. Maybe I should reach out. You know, reach out to them. We do that all the time in the United Way world. And I know other networks do that. Maybe even through your network, people could be paired up and matched up. And maybe, you know, I think mentoring is really important and really good. But I also think sometimes for people that sounds overwhelming, because if I get assigned a mentor, there's expectation on me, mm-hmm. you know, and so I don't know if I have the capacity to do that, right, to report in. But, you know, what if mentor is used a little bit more loosely and it's, you know, here's a go-to for you, right? So, you know, you've been doing this. I know you have this challenge. Here's somebody else that's doing like work. They might not be in the same geography as you, but you could at least find out what's working in their community. Or there's a reality, too, of having a sounding board. You know, and having a trusted colleague that you can bounce things off of maybe before you present them in your community. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's definitely value in that as well, helping you with your leadership around your area of expertise and just, you know, bouncing that off of someone sometimes, having that kind of network that you can learn from, lend from their expertise to then bring that maybe back into your own community.
Yeah. A lot of what you're talking about is some of this feels overwhelming, or it can. Time feels like the enemy. But it doesn't have to be that like fancy coalition or something, at least as your first start. Like sometimes people have time for a coffee or a quick email, and that's the start of something. So if you're feeling like you have an issue you want to tackle, you can take the first step by just sending a message.
Absolutely. And I also think when we have challenges, we need to realize that we're not almost for sure never the first person who's had that challenge. Someone else has gone through that. And same if we have a great idea, right? Like maybe everything is good. You don't have time challenges, staff challenges. I mean, I understand everyone pretty much works at capacity or over, but I think different people too can just find time. You just, if it's something that's really important, you figure out how to do it, how to make the connection. And so maybe it's that, you know, I have this great idea. And I really want it to happen in my community, and just maybe connecting with two or three people and saying, who else would we need at the table? You know, who's not here that we could get here, and who could help us get them here?
Yeah. You also talked before of when you're motivating us to kind of work through some of the challenges, like don't be afraid of like a change or don't be attached to the results. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think, isn't it probably human nature that we just don't love change? I mean, some people do, but for the most part, we're a little bit, even if we're okay with change, we're a little bit resistant sometimes. And I think it's important, especially when we're in a leadership role, that we understand as much as we may not like it, we maybe don't even agree with it, but we have to be open to change or we won't exist. I mean, there will come a time where if we don't evolve and make some change and hear what our constituents are telling us, right? Hear what whoever we're serving families, we're serving kids, our colleagues. If, you know, if we're not really listening, we might be listening but not hearing, or hearing but not listening. But you know, are we really taking what we hear and making some change? And so I do think in general, there's just a resistance to that. You know, maybe it's our shield of armor a little bit. So figuring out how to be open to change. It doesn't mean you have to love it or run after it, but sometimes there are just things that we have to do. And probably, you know, recent years has helped all of us do that a little bit because we just had to, right? So I think that there's certainly that part that we need to be a little more comfortable with change. I don't know that we have to, you don't have to embrace it, but you know, be a little bit more comfortable. And then taking what we learn from that and looking at the opportunities and how does that affect the long term of our program, of whomever we might be serving, and trying to use that in a beneficial way so that the end result is greater satisfaction from the kids that we're serving.
Yeah, so when we break down silos and we invite other people in, there might be a different solution than what we originally imagined, but it can potentially have a ripple effect and of positive change.
Absolutely. And you know, the other side of that though, if it doesn't work, so what? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've made new connections, we've learned about other programs, we've understood, maybe learned a little bit about what the tolerance is of the community or of whomever we've assembled for those changes. And if it doesn't work, we learn from it, we adjust it, and maybe we try again, or maybe we say, okay, that really wasn't a great idea. and now we move on. So sometimes I think by taking a chance or a perceived risk that we get so wrapped up in what if it doesn't work. Now, of course, there's fiscal responsibility and there's, you know, the even just the amount of time and manpower that gets put into something, and we all by nature want success. But if, you know, we've put an idea out there and we've worked on it a little bit and we've brought some people together and it just doesn't seem like it's possible, or it's just not going to be embraced, or it's not going to happen, so what?
Yeah.
We move on. We learn from it. And we move on to the next.
Our like air quote, no one can see me, but air quote, failure could very well just be one step in the next success.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's how we learn, right? And if we think back, and we don't remember this of ourselves, but you know, anyone who has children or is around small children, trial and error is how we learn. So we need to be a little more willing, I think, to do that as adults as well.
Terry, as you're talking, I'm picturing my 9-month-old as he's trying to crawl right now and plopping on his belly. So
yeah,
we all
the arms
that.
Miss sometimes,
yes,
right?
We all continue to just land on our bellies as we go through. So I want to end on a note. You've been doing this good work for so long and you have such good experience. So what's one of your proudest moments from your work?
Wow, that's a big question. You know, I think that there's really a lot of them, and I'll start right back from like probably day one when my children were little, and then they are 16 and 18 now, but when, you know, they were infants and toddlers, I always told my husband, when you retire, I'm going to go work somewhere where I can just feel good about what I'm doing. I'm going to work at church or at United Way. You know, and so that was like 18 years ago. And I never anticipated that it would be that soon. You know, I just thought, and I loved my job that I had. It was not, but I was just like, you know, I just want to feel like I'm just really doing something, you know, change-wise and impact-wise. And so when the opportunity came, again, way sooner than I thought it would from a casual conversation, I thought, okay, well, this might be a sign here, right? Like, so let's pursue this. And I had been a volunteer with United Way for about 15 years before that. So in a variety of capacities, mostly on the campaign side, not necessarily on program partnership side. And so for me, you know, all of the learning that went into that early part was really, really important. And I still feel like that all the time. I mean, every day, like, okay, we're doing good stuff here, you know, and we're really making an impact. One of the, you know, speaking of a specific instance, just as an example, when I started at United Way in 2008, there was all of these fragmented school supply drives going on all over the place, all over the community. Everybody was collecting school supplies and then doing what with them, right? I mean, they were donating them to the school or whatever, but no. So in 2009, we organized what we call Stuff the Bus and Stuff the Desk in our communities. And so we leverage all these school supplies and then we do a backpack distribution. And this is happening. We are not special. This happens in many, many, many communities, but it was the idea around collaboration and reducing duplication and keeping costs low, because every single one of those separate ones were even doing something simpler as making a flyer and so we were, let's get everyone around the same table. Let's talk about what we're collecting, why we're collecting, where it's going to go, and then, you know, collaboratively putting that all together. And I can tell you we're in process right now, but last year we served almost 1,000 kids just in the greater Wisconsin Rapids area. And we are not, I mean, we're talking a 40,000 person population just for that community. So it's significant and it makes a huge impact. And I think anything that we can do, even if it's little, anything that we can do to lighten someone's load and show a little empathy and make someone else's life better just speaks volumes.
Thanks, Terry. I think that's such a good example that kind of summarizes everything we've been talking about, that importance of just reaching out. You might be surprised someone else has that same need, or they might be working on the same thing, and just the power that it has to come together. That's really what we're talking about, is that just that connection piece. So thank you again for being here today.
You bet.
And thank you for listening. We hope you leave today with a few more tools in your toolbox. Be sure to visit our website and sign up for our emails, where we share information about all of our upcoming professional development opportunities.